Well, hello everybody and welcome again to the Weirdly Magical podcast with Jen and Lou. And on this episode, we're going to look at the Pisces full moon, which is on September the 2nd at 6:22 a.m. London time. And we'll talk a little bit more about that as we go through. Before we introduce ourselves, I'm going to switch it around a little bit and remind you that we do take questions. You can message our Weirdly Magical Facebook page or email weirdlymagicalpodcast@gmail.com to possibly have your question featured on the podcast. Oh, there's a weird noise in the background. Anyway, we also have a Patreon, which is patreon.com/weirdlymagical. For $3 a month, you can support our work. We're kind of just at halfway to a point where we said we would start doing Patreon-only content. So the more of you that come and support our work, the closer we'll be to doing Patreon-only content. So, but thank you so much to those that already do support us on Patreon. It helps to cover the costs of running this podcast because there are a few running costs. So now we'll introduce ourselves quickly. So Jen.
Hey there, I'm Jen Dishen, jendishen.com, and I am an Akashic guide and creator of the Illuminating Journey Cards, author of Meishi Cocoon, and I guide my clients to find the truth of who they are so they can live their soul's choice every day.
And I'm Louise Eddington, louiseeddington.com. I am an astrologer and writer of two books, Modern Astrology and The Complete Guide to Astrology. And I do astrology readings. I am currently getting certified with the Organization of Professional Astrologers. I've decided to use the COVID time to my advantage. And I am just starting a training to become a certified hypnotherapist and past life regression therapist also, which I'm going to combine with my astrology. And that's that for now. So let's look at our cards. I keep forgetting. So this time I'm going to go straight to the cards. So Jen, what's your card?
My card is from the Illuminating Journey cards that I created with the help of the Akashic Records. And this is card 16, Soul Portal 16. And what I find fascinating about this card, if those of you can't see it, it's like in an underwater cave, and there's blue water, there's a lot of stalagmites, and this kind of large, I don't know what you would call that, like a kind of altar, I guess. And a female standing in front of the altar. She's in the water. She has scarabs around. There's lightning in the background. There's a lot of symbols on the altar. Some people think it's a very phallic symbol. So when I look at this card, I feel like it's this reminder or this moment. And this card has been coming up quite a bit. It's a reminder that we are committing to the path, the deep path of knowing our soul's journey, our soul's truth, the thing we are committed to, the truth that we want to live by. And so as we look at this altar, which is very three-dimensional, it's very whole, it has a great presence, it's this idea of being in the subterranean areas of our soul, of our being, of our human existence, and finding the reason why we are here and what we're here to do, and commit to the path. And of course, the scarabs are very sacred. These are gold scarabs, very sacred. And the number 16, which is about following our intuition, highly charged. This time, this card seems to feel like things are really highly charged, and kind of my eye keeps going to this part here, like this, almost like this dragon's tail coming in, or a sacred beast coming into the space, like breaking apart what has been considered kind of relevant to our lives and no longer is.
Funny you talked about it as a dragon's tail. To everybody, it's kind of like, it looks like a lightning strike to me, which is very appropriate because this full moon is in aspect to Uranus, the Lord of Lightning Bolts. So, and as usual, we have similar colored cards. So,
don't match the Piscean colorings, right?
It is. And I'm wearing my Piscean colored clothes too, I thought, especially for this. But I pulled the Hangman, which to my mind is just the Pisces card anyway, because it's, you know, surrender, release, and this is, and very Piscean altogether. It's one of my favorite cards because it really is surrendering and releasing to just letting go of the old patterns and moving towards this, I'm going to call it spiritual transformation, but also it's kind of a collective transformation with Pisces as well. It's a, for those that can't see, it is a figure of a being, but it looks like a man, but it doesn't really matter, upside down. And he has, you know, he has the nails through his hands and feet, the cross of the cross. So it's a very kind of Christ-like surrendering kind of energy of dying for to be reborn kind of thing. That's the kind of energy I feel of this card. We have the snakes of transformation as well. And at the top, we have the rays of spirit coming in. So it's a very spiritual card. I love this card. It's quite amazing. So,
and the Ankh, there's an Ankh on the top.
Yes, there's an Ankh as well. Do you want to explain what an Ankh is? I can't remember. I'm having a mental block.
It's the Ankh. It's considered a very sacred kind of instrument from the, well, it's older than the Egyptian age. We usually go to Egyptian. So it's that female symbol of, well, we take it as female, but it's a symbol of almost like the scepter that brings life forward and has many qualities. So it's kind of like the original cross in a way.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a very powerful transformative tool.
Mm-hmm. And of course the snake's often seen as female as well, but you know, we all have the Kundalini snake energy within each of us. So this is just completely about transforming. And as we talk about the full moon itself, we'll see that there is a lot of rebalancing in this of the divine feminine energies coming in, but also that doesn't mean that's within every one of us. So, oh yeah. So.
And the process of being upside down, which we all are in a sense right now, we're turned upside down, we're kind of helpless,
mm-hmm.
because the systems we have kind of adhered to are collapsing. And so we can be scrambling around or kind of trying to unhook ourselves from being upside down, or we can just kind of let go and have that experience. What does it feel like?
Mm-hmm.
Be surrendered to who we are in this moment.
Yeah.
We kind of feel like our cards, it's very interesting because if you just hold your card up, it's like there's a lot of very, you know, there's that similarity of that energy like you have where the Ankh and the foot leg goes down. There's this, you know, it's a very masculine energy, and yet the surrounding is very feminine. It's like the, you know, it's the balance of the two poles, right?
So there's a lot of trust involved in both our cards as well,
right.
Kind of energy of
listening, right? I think you talk about that, listening. maybe in our conversation before, this idea of listening to what's next, what's coming, as opposed to, I'm going to just take all the stuff and do something with it.
Yeah.
Really letting go of preconceived notions.
Exactly. And I love the quote. In fact, I am going to read that. I wasn't going to, but I'm going to. There's a book that I have with these tossed tarot cards by Anjali Zarian, that wonderful writer. And she quotes from Alan Cohen. She said, "The world would have you agree with its dismal dream of limitation, but the light would have you soar like the eagle of your sacred visions." So that's in both our cards, I think, as well, this kind of sacred vision energy that, you know, so we're being invited to just kind of let go of this attachment to holding on to tight to the world.
Right. I'm going to read what it says in my book about my card. And just, it's called Into the Temple of Truth. Amongst the crystalline waters of strange and change, illusion and false ideals topple as ancient portals command connection to the sacred truth within.
There you go. Oh, so there you go, guys. We don't need to do any more. No, I'm
joking. No, it kind of feels like this is what this moon is about. You know, these.
It really does. You know.
Right.
So to talk about the moon, it is. As I said, on September the 2nd, 6:22 a.m. Universal Time, which is London time, so you can adjust for yourself. But I think it's on, because at that time, it should be pretty much on the second most places. West coast of the US and Hawaii, I think, are on September the 1st, but it's generally on September the 2nd. It's at 10 degrees and 12 minutes of Pisces. It's a full moon, so it's in opposition. So the sun is at 10 degrees and 12 minutes of Virgo. The closest conjunction to the full moon is Ceres at 4 degrees of Pisces. But the moon is in on almost exact aspect to Uranus in Taurus. And if you remember back, the last full moon was actually square to Uranus. So Uranus, the great awakener, the Lord of lightning bolts, is connected over and over again right now. And he's recently stationed retrograde. But it's the moon is in what's called a sextile aspect to Uranus. And because it's a full moon, we go from the moon. And I always think of the sextile aspect as an opportunity. So there's that thing I talked about with my card about breaking of old patterns. And I saw a lightning bolt in Jen's. She said it was the dragon's tail, but that would fit as well because that's the south node, which is breaking free of the old ways as well. So it's a very powerful full moon, especially with that aspect to it. Pisces, Virgo, I always think of the little phrase of practical mysticism. It's, you know, bringing this spiritual vision down to earth in a practical, useful way in Virgo, in the sun in Virgo. But before we dive into further, we'll also be talking about, there's a huge amount of energy in this chart around 24 degrees and an almost exact grand cross or grand square between Eris and Lilith, with Mars close by in Aries, Venus in Cancer, and Juno in Libra, and Saturn and Pluto in Capricorn. That's probably going to dominate even more than the full moon, this grand cross energy, to be quite honest, because it's also tied into Mercury in Virgo and the nodes. So it's a very powerful turning point. After this full moon, that grand cross actually starts to separate as well, because Venus moves on. So this is a peak moment, if you like, at the start of September. So Jen, what do you have to say about the numbers?
Well, first of all, I want to talk about the fact that September is the 13 universal months. So 2 + 2 + 9, that gives us 13, which is a 4. And remember that the year we're in, 2020, is a 4. 13 is the number of resurrection. We've talked about it. It's the number that has been triggered over and over again this year, especially in last year, but we can see more and more this year. It's a highly significant number because it is about the divine feminine. It's about the things that we have been told are bad or evil or wrong or scary. You know, even buildings don't have a number 13 because so unlucky. So it's that twisting around of our ideas about being connected to our intuition, both our cards, and this moon is about our intuition. It's the Piscean energy, the secrets, but also the awareness of our depth, our connection to the divine. So those are highly important just when you think about the 13 all over the month. And the idea is about us taking a sacred path, using our expression of voice, our kind of inner child, to awaken the message we're here to deliver or express. And so that means we do need to come to terms with our sacredness and our truth. And we do need to make room for those spaces, like the sacred, divine, the female and male, in new ways, not the way that it's being pushed out of our normal life, but to be welcome back in. So that's a really huge part. And so this full moon that's happening on the 2nd, it's highly significant, of course, the dates and the fact that it's 2, 1 or 2 in 2020. So we have more twos. The actual number of this date adds up to a 15, which is the number of alchemy. It's about using our heart. Remember, we moved from the last new moon into, it was about the heart, the Leo, kind of bursting open our heart, the kind of lightning striking our hearts so that we can activate our intuition in a heartfelt manner. It's useless without our intuition. What's the use of ideas and things if we're not connected to ourselves, to the divine, to the humanity of who we are? So those things are really important. And then, so the 20 or the 2 is about reminding us of the polarities of how we choose to, what choices we're making as we go forward, what is the focus of our life, our life's journey? What are we here to experience? Those underlying truths, those underlying secrets that have been hidden, are all being fired up. We're being fired up and we're experiencing fire and storm and all kinds of things, not just mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically. On every level, we are being awakened and very uncomfortable. And 13 is a number that awakens sudden change that is going to force us to create a new structure. And the actual date that sun and moon at 10, I think that's so amazing. 1 and 0 is the numbers of the universe, the straight line, the encapsulation, the male and female. It couldn't be more obvious what the message is, this idea of finding our self-connection through in the mass of where we are. 10 is the number of instant manifestation. So as we are in this year of increased manifestation, increased power to realize our reality is what we create. It's created through the thoughts we have, the actions we take. And so the 10 reminds us whatever we think about, whatever we focus on will be magnified and made real. So it's a call to newness, because 10 is also one. It's about new beginnings. It's about lighting a fire to our new beliefs.
Wonderful. Yes. Yeah. And, you know, yeah, I can't. I just want to actually talk about the Ceres being nearby as well, though, because we're clearly in the time of COVID and major upheaval and major change. There's an element of this as well as of feeling major grief in a good way. You know, it does. I don't think mean that more's going to happen. We're grieving for what we had, which is fine. Which is because even though we know things had to change, Ceres does represent grief, but she also represents and loss, but she also represents forgiveness. To my mind, this is a very this full moon is really asking us to grieve what we've lost, the old life, and to forgive ourselves and to forgive others, you know, that we may have kind of clashed with and fallen out with, and to move towards this place of wholeness in Virgo, and to move towards also a place of grief and forgiveness for what we've done to our earth in Taurus, where Uranus is. And you know, it's quite clear that our old systems are breaking down, and that it's probably necessary that they do. And this is a very healing full moon in that respect, to my mind, if we step into this energy. The breaking of old patterns, the breaking of blaming others for what we've done, and being critical of others for what the collective has done. It's a real coming together full moon to my mind, and the gentler aspects to Uranus make it more that way of you know, breaking the pattern of saying it's your fault, and the victim mode of Pisces, which is kind of the shadow of the Pisces energy of feeling like it's all been done to you, you know, by somebody else. Well, we've all had our part in it, you know, over lifetimes of what's come to this, and it's kind of as it was meant to be. So it's kind of coming to this place of trust, surrender, acceptance, that we're moving into this new age, and we've got to stop this kind of blaming and hammerheading and all that kind of stuff towards moving into the new paradigm. That's how the actual full moon feels like to me. Almost more interesting to me, though, is this grand cross that I talked about, because it's bringing in the players of the Eris story, almost imperfect kind of interplay. Now, just as a reminder of the myth, Eris was the outsider. She was thought to be, you know, an ugly person and very kind of mean and dark. She's the dark goddess energy. And so the gods and goddesses had a wedding, and she wasn't invited. And so she threw the apple, now called the apple of discord, because she was the goddess of discord and strife. And she threw the apple into the party, saying to the fairest. And now Pallas Athena, Aphrodite, and Hera or Juno all fought over who was the fairest. And it ultimately caused the Trojan War and the fall of Troy. Well, now here we have Eris, exactly conjunct Black Moon Lilith, who was the original outsider as well, because she was Adam's first wife, who would not submit to Adam. And she was either thrown out of Eden or left in a huff. And she was also portrayed as, you know, the dark goddess, the succubus, and who killed babies and all kinds of things like that. So those two are exactly to the minute conjunct at 24 degrees 24 minutes of Aries with Mars nearby. So very kind of angry energy, if you like, saying I'm not going to be left out anymore. It's square to Venus or Aphrodite in Cancer, almost exactly. These and opposing Juno or Hera in Libra, almost exactly. Pallas Athena is over there in Capricorn. She's kind of hovering on the sidelines a little bit, but they're in square to Saturn and Pluto in Capricorn. And it kind of feels to me like I think, and I'm not the only one who thinks this, that this that myth or the apple of discord may have been a bit misinterpreted. It may have been nothing about who's the prettiest of faith. It might have been who's the fairest, as in people being left out, outsiders, outcasts, the poor, you know, all that kind of energy, and fairness in terms of equality. And to miss my mind, this powerful grand cross is saying, like, let's all come together and fight against the patriarchal institutions, which have nothing to do with men, and really break them down, and let's create something that's more equitable. That's the opportunity of this grand cross, to my mind. Sorry, I went quite long there.
Yes, but fascinating. So yes, absolutely. I wanted to mention about Ceres before I talk about the other stuff. Mm-hmm. But Ceres, to me, what's so interesting is, first of all, she was one of the major players in terms of a female style role, or in terms of the crops, the land, the way we get to use the land and interact with the land is through growth, growing crops, doing things. And she was the one who, whose daughter went down into, or was kidnapped and went into the underground. So she holds the key to the crops, and she is, or to how we feed ourselves. And I think this is really interesting if you think about in terms of being right by the moon and this idea of manifesting, or manifesting what we believe in and how we feed those stories and how we feed our bodies. Because one of the weaknesses of our system is the fact that so many have been left hungry. We haven't just been left hungry because we haven't had the right food. I mean, there's lots, I'm not talking about me personally, but there's a lot of people that are starving or get to eat terrible manufactured food made out of sugar that doesn't help them, right? And so through the ages, talk about unfairness, a way of controlling people is through their stomachs, right? Mm-hmm. We can be as smart as our stomachs are fed. And so that impacts our mind, impacts our choices, and it can lead to lack. Like when we are in fear, when we think about competitiveness, which is the story you're talking about, Lou, in terms of people fighting over who's the best, the fairest, the most decent, or whatever, what rules are the most acceptable, is thinking about how when you treat people differently through their stomachs, when you put people to a side because of their beliefs, their actions, etc., then you create discord, right? Which is what this is all about, as our system, the polarization or the systematic continuity of I'm right, you're wrong, I'm great, you're not, I'm rich, you're poor, all of those things that actually distract us from being in truth with who we are, because that's all this is. This is all about control through the ages. All these stories, all these things that have happened have been about making us believe we're not enough, which is, again, that's our food, right? That's the story we're playing out in the world. I'm not enough. I don't have what I need. I better hang on to my possessions. I've got to fight them away from other people. I've got to possess this property, this land, this food, etc. And that's the weak link. And she is at 4 degrees. So our illusions around what we think is necessary in order to feed us, our feed our souls, our body, our lives, our education, our minds, etc., is saying we have to be really strong and disciplined about how we create something new, how we are not being distracted by the story. So I think that's a really important factor here when we're looking at also a hugely influential female figure, and remembering how the females have been ostracized. Like all these stories about these goddesses, etc., they're always about the goddesses being, you know, these terrible, they're either they're extremely cruel, or they what are they doing there? Drawing people in like mermaids and, you know, making them do things they don't want to do. It's all
they were minimized, you know, just right. As very important when they were actually very important figures originally.
Right. And they made like they've lost, they had originally it was the woman who were the priestesses, the high priestesses that everyone went to for permission. Eventually they got all killed off. That's the snakes. The whole energy of the snakes was the female energy. They were all killed off by the church, basically, and people in power, like, oh, let's just keep it all between us and set a certain tone. I think that it makes me think about that song everyone's talking about, which is those two women that I forget, apparently very well known.
Cardi B and...
Yeah, that's it. With the pussy thing.
Yeah.
And so it's really interesting because, I mean, I don't watch that stuff, but I went to watch just because I wanted to know what it was like. And I found it so, you know, I know people talk about this is empowering women. Like, and in a sense, yes, you're being empowered through your sexuality and that's a good way. But to me, I just found it, you know what? I thought it was like, wow, this is just another kind of patriarchal mismanagement. So we think we're free, right? Oh yeah, look. But then the whole framework is so patriarchal. It's all set up for a man's pleasure. It's all set up to continue the illusion, like, oh yes. And then I thought it was like, you know, it's these women in these secret rooms doing all this thing, you know, talking about like, oh, how much I want, you know, am I allowed to say the word, you know, the penis thing, I suppose I'm allowed to say that. But anyway, you know, it's like, it's so ridiculous. Like, that's a man's wet dream. What has that got to do with woman's empowerment?
It's like women, man's hip-hop video done by women, but
really, total bullshit. Total bullshit. And and then at the end they kind of sneak away. I'm like, okay, like, how does this show you empowered?
I haven't even watched it. Russell Brand did an interesting video about it.
Right. I actually enjoyed what he said. He actually had some really good points. Like, that it's just, how are you free when you're creating your thing, your freedom, inside an artificial container? I don't know. Those weren't exactly his words. I'm paraphrasing. But
creating it within the patriarchal constructs, really. And he was talking about, you know, how, and it's something I've long said about feminism as well, you know, like, a lot of it is about trying to fit into the man's world.
Right. Be accepted. Be accepted in a patriarchal structure. It's like, you can do that, I can do it too. It's like, who cares? Like, the point is, for me, when I look at this moon and I look at the time we're in, it's like, we have to be courageous. We have to go beyond. We have to be like Eris and Lilith and go, I'm not following your rules.
Right.
Move that shit out of my sight. Get away. Sorry, I hope I'm like, I don't know if I'm allowed to say all these words. Anyway, I'm saying them. So.
I just have to put a warning on.
Okay. Sorry. But... you know, it's to me, that's the thing, that the illusion that we all have, and that's the Piscean thing, the illusion that if I just behave within this structure, I'll be okay, I'll be safe, no one will stop me from expressing myself. But who cares about that structure? Because that's the structure we have to break down. Because as long as we're playing to it, it's going to control us. And those people are going to, you know, when they come along with their orders and they tell us what to do, people are going to follow them. You know, like this whole thing with these conspiracy theorists. Like, I'm like, they were really upsetting me because I feel like they're slowing us down. Like, stop this. They're slowing us down. We can't move forward. And I had to ask the Akashic Masters, what is this about? And what's going on? Like, I'm so irritated. And they're like, well, what do you think the world is about? You know, what do you think the purpose is of people being here? And I'm like, to express themselves. And then they're like, well, they're just expressing themselves. So I'm like, oh, okay, I get it. Mm-hmm. And then... just realizing that I had this, what do you call that? That thing when you suddenly have a moment where something comes through.
Download.
Something like that. Okay, download. But
one of those eureka moments. And I was talking to somebody and thinking, well, what if all these people that have these conspiracy theories, the reason why they're hooking into conspiracy theories is because they don't know what to do. Like people like you and I, Lou, we're very curious and we've never really followed the rules. But for people who've usually followed the rules, it must be pretty terrifying seeing all of this stuff collapsing and like, oh, I don't have an opinion because I don't have somebody telling me what to do. Oh, here's somebody with an opinion. Okay. And they're really strict about it. I'm going to glom onto it. Right. So it kind of makes sense. So you think about like that, like, oh, I don't know how to think for myself. So I'm going to find somebody who's very opinionated, because usually people like us, we're opinionated, but we're not opinionated in the sense of trying to make other people agree with us. And they're used to, that's the patriarchy. Like there is only one opinion. Everyone will be punished unless we have one opinion. And so I think that's the illusion that there is one opinion, the illusion that, you know, those stories that we have, that we're looking at, like that's really what was happening. We know because women are bad and, you know, men are good and, you know, all of that stuff. So I think that to me is the biggest shake up and wake up, is that we have to realize it's all a bunch of lies, right? Yeah. It's all a construct. And okay, if we can do and create whatever we want to create, then what are we choosing to do and create, right? What responsibility are we taking?
And, you know, another angle on this grand cross as well is that, you know, if you go back aeons to the original myths, you know, like the Roman pantheon of gods was called the Dei Consenti, and it was six males, six females. And it was a circular kind of ruling. And Juno or Hera in Greece had equal power to Zeus or Jupiter. They were all paired up, all these gods and goddesses, you know, and Aphrodite or Venus was equally powerful as well. And Ceres was a really powerful goddess who was about the grain, the harvest, natural cycles of nature and life and death. And they've all been minimized along with controlling the actual natural cycles of life and death. You know, one of my favorite writers is Stephen Jenkinson, who wrote Die Wise. And he talks about, you know, in the book, he really starts by talking about what will people do for more time? We're just trying to cheat death all the time, whereas it's possible. You know, and also with the land and the growing, you know, we eat everything out of season. We don't, we've lost the connection. And I think all this, it comes down to all levels, male, female within us, the land, what we eat, it comes down to everything being, or we're being given the opportunity to bring it all back into balance. And even the COVID thing, you know, some of the conspiracy theorists, you know, who go on about Bill Gates and things are going, well, you just need to take your vitamins and and get your sunshine and all that. And but they have a point in a way. It's because we have lost this kind of natural health thing. So they always have a point underneath all that. You know, we have lost this ability to look at our health, you know, instead of treating the symptoms.
Right. But also being in rhythm with the rhythm of the earth. Right.
Exactly.
What you're saying is this idea of, you know, eating in season, digesting what there is, sharing the bounty, being wise about how we interact with the land. Like not all land should be used for more and more buildings and stuff.
We shouldn't be bottling water and drinking out of plastic bottles.
But then that's all business, right? And that's the illusion, right? The illusion that, you know, water's not safe, or using natural things isn't safe. It's the illusion that's been given to us. Even when you think about how you know, a lot of vitamins, et cetera, like here in the States, they have the FDA, which kind of looks at things and says what's safe and what isn't. And there's so much controversy around that because they don't really say that about, like, you know, you can have vitamins, but you're not allowed to say it has any properties. But then you can bring some weird medicine that's killed people through the trials and you can say it does all this stuff. And, you know, it's that, what's the illusion, what's real? And again, listening to some expert who's, you know, another, you know, it's the Oz concept, right? Behind the curtain, you have the feudal guys in the underwear. I don't know, there was this great movie I watched about this guy. I think it was a French movie. I don't know, it was an Amazon or something, I think so. Don't remember the name, but it's about this guy who's God, and he's like sitting in his underwear in this room, like in this awful little room with a computer, and doing all these crazy right. things just to amuse himself, right? And so it really is this idea that what's the illusion and what's real, and the only way we can find out is by actually traversing through, like having all these crazy things happening that are peeling away layer after layer. Oh, there's another illusion, that's another illusion. But it's not enough to recognize their illusions. We also have to recognize the path, like the thing we're connected to. And the only thing that is solid is our connection to the universe, our connection to our spirit, the awareness of our physical body, the earth. Those are the real things, and everything else is just a little play, it's a little thing. So, yeah.
Oh, so what would you say about the fact that, I know you've talked about six before, but I think it's really, when we looked at the degrees with Eris and Lilith conjunct exactly at 24-24, that's just like, right. That's, I know, so there's lots of twos there, there's the four again, there's two sixes, there's, well, four sixes.
Yeah, so we have a lot of 2, 4, 6, repeating. So the thing that's so interesting about the 24, and of course, remember I said that the day is a 15, so it's also the universal date is a 15, so it's a 6 mm-hmm. as well, is the 6 is our kind of connection point, our human connection point, mm-hmm. because certainly in the tarot and in ancient kind of stories, the Hierogamas, the 6, the card 6, which is about the marriage between our two sides, the marriage between kind of what you were talking about, the in terms of coming to terms with our intuitive side, which we call the female, and then the external, which is the action, which is the male. So that is a wholeness, right? And I was even thinking about the fact that when you were talking about the stories, is that when you said that we've misinterpreted, I was just thinking about, or probably getting the message from the masters, is that the male-female stories, the way we've interpreted is that we've given them like certain characteristics, this is bad, this is good, instead of the whole story, which is kind of this happens and you see then this happens, right? There's kind of when you kind of step back, you can see a whole different story that's actually happening, that is about when we make certain choices, these are the results of those choices, right? Mm-hmm. And so we are living the results. And so with the 6, when you think about that marriage, or you think about the coming together of our intuitive self, the holiness of being who we are, mm-hmm. and connecting to the fact that we can physicalize our world, that's the 6. So the 6 is so much of love, because it's it's the 1 and the 0, so it's the 10 coming together mm-hmm. as a pregnant figure, so kind of pregnant, giving, what are we giving birth to, what, you know, and it's so much about love, it's an emotional number, it's about understanding the balance of who we are, not just like 2 is coming, you know, like where am I, but 6 is in community with our loved ones, with our inner balance, with our communities, our families, our homes. It's all of those things. it's a very abundant number. So it's a kind of a crossover number in that sense. And 24 is kind of that number which gives us like, it's, we are in balance, in true balance. That's the 24, where we understand the power of our love and how we can create, and not just create, but that thing with Sirius, which is nurture, right? We can nurture our beingness, which is kind of what you were talking about in terms of forgiveness, gratitude, etc. All of those things, the grace of our human characteristics, the grace of feeling our emotions and being at peace with other people having other opinions. That's very much, you know, kind of the point of the six.
I also want to point out that this Grand Cross is in cardinal signs, which are Aries, Cancer, Libra, Capricorn. And cardinal signs are the first sign in each quadrant of the chart, and they're initiating signs, but I also think they are our identity signs. I always think of Aries as kind of the I am, and Cancer, who am I in family, in relationships, and Libra, who am I in relationship to more people than the immediate family, and then Capricorn, who am I in relation to society, the world. So this Grand Cross is just changing so much. It's been active on and off. You know, we had the Uranus Pluto square in Aries and Capricorn going on from, I think it was 2011 to 2015-ish, around that time. Our actual identities are shifting in relation to who we feel we are, in relation to who we are as within families, what the family means, what greater society means, what equality means, and what our institutions mean, and the public, and how that must represent our changing identity. Now, if you have any planets around 24 degrees of the cardinal signs, again, Aries, Cancer, Libra, Capricorn, you are being personally transformed greatly by this. But it's also tied in with aspects to the nodes. They're at 26 degrees in this chart. Mercury, they're at 26 degrees of Sagittarius and Gemini, just to, because not everybody remembers where everything is. Also, Mercury is at 24 degrees of Virgo. So Mercury is tied into all of this. So that brings in the mutable signs as well, bringing change. And I did want to mention Haumea, the dwarf planet Haumea, because she doesn't show up on this software that I use. So, but I happen to know that she's still at 25 degrees Libra with almost exactly conjunct to the asteroid Juno in this chart. And she's the planet of fertility and birth, and represents that. So this is massive, to be quite honest, this Grand Cross. We are birthing and destroying the old institutions and birthing the new in major, major ways with this Grand Cross. I do think the COVID, the virus, is a part of it, because Hygieia is also involved, and she's global health. She's over there with Venus in Cancer in this. So the virus itself is changing who we are in the world and our identities. I just cannot emphasize how huge this is and what a big opportunity it is to step forward in really major new ways in our personal identities and how we relate to each other and the institutions we create in the world. It's probably that this month and the next few weeks are a time even more than the conjunction from January where Saturn, Pluto were conjunct. That kind of started it. This is bringing the real change to my mind.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I was just thinking or hearing about the fact that what is actually happening in this grand cross is kind of a crossing over. I know we've talked about it, but a crossing over of the rigidity. So as the kind of tension that we might look at that Saturn has represented to us, or the roles that, you know, many of those stories have played or played on us, like keeping a certain structure in place, as that is being battered and broken down through persistent resistance, mm-hmm. you know, we're moving into that mutable energy. And what's so important here again is when you understand that everything is breaking down, and therefore it is the most important time to take a stand for what you believe in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just cannot give up. You just cannot sit down and say, I'm sitting this one out. On whatever level that is open to you, you must stand for something, for your own enlightenment, for your own connection to the divine, for your own peace of whatever it is in the world. Because the truth is, you're standing in the world, or how you show up in the world, what your family, the connection with your family, all those things Lou was talking about, none of that matters if you don't know who you are. And the only way you can know who you are is by taking a stand about something. And that stand, or setting that boundary, which is what all of the two energy is about. It's about recognizing I have boundaries within me. That means my belief system. That means the actions I'm willing to take, the words I'm willing to do. Who am I willing to stand up for? What am I willing to speak out about? On whatever level matters, because if you don't do that, it's like in the mutability, your power is taken away, and somebody can hook into that, or people, that's what they do. That's the whole point of these conspiracy theories as an example to us, is that you just glom on someone else's thing. Like, some of the things that they're saying are probably true, right? But when you just glom on, instead of saying, oh, that's interesting, tell me more, I'm curious, I want to know more, but hey, no, hands off around that, I don't believe that, you know, that's the juicy part of how we grow. We grow through our curiosity. We grow by understanding of our capacity to love and to feel that this thing that we're building is so beautiful and so worth the effort, that I'm going to swallow my anger, or I'm going to, maybe swallow anger is not the right expression, but I'm kind of going to change the way, I'm going to mutate the way I express my anger and put it towards something. You know, I'm going to filter it, so it's not just yelling, screaming, going, you're wrong, I'm right, but it's more like, this is who I want to be, and coming back again, this is who I want to be, and this is who I want to be. It's like, yeah, okay, let me just see, I'm going to try this, does this work, tell me the answers. If people aren't willing to even tell us why they're thinking the way they're thinking, or why they're coming up with, or why they have the solution, then are they worth following, right? Because to me, the most powerful thing of any leader is their willingness to grow and to ask, to answer questions, right? We should all be listening and asking questions, because we can't be good listeners if we're not asking right questions, right? We're just listening to people. Who are we listening to, right? These things are so important as we grow from a breaking apart and needing to find ground that connects us to our existence.
And talking of the anger, it's interesting that Mars in Aries is really our aggression, our will, our anger, our forcing energy. And Mars is stationing retrograde, in a rare retrograde in his own sign in Aries, a week after after this full moon. So he stations on September the 9th. Interesting as well, and I hadn't actually noticed it before, and I don't know why, but we mentioned that this full moon is in aspect to Uranus in Taurus, but it's also in aspect to Pallas Athena in Capricorn. And both those energies, Pallas Athena and Uranus, are associated with Aquarius. Uranus is the modern ruler of Aquarius, and we are moving into the age of Aquarius. Pallas Athena is very associated with Aquarius. I don't know if I'd call it rulership, but they're both strategists and creators of new patterns. They're both very inventive. They're both very innovative is another word that could be used. And these two are actually forming a kite formation with the full moon, which kind of means we've got an earthly grand trine between Uranus, Pallas Athena and the sun. And the outlet is to that moon in Pisces. And that's a very healing aspect, to be quite honest. So I was like, why is Pallas Athena? What's her role in this? I kind of think we're being given the opportunity to, I mentioned it at the start of my card, to break free of old patterns, but not only breaking free of old patterns, to start to create the new patterns. Yeah. What do we want, our new, there's always going to be some form of institutions, let's face it. So
we need some kind of governance. We're not going to be able to operate without governance. We'll just be a bunch of crazy people or arguing.
I've got a friend who's always talking about direct democracy. In other words, the people vote on every single thing. Well, how's that going to work with millions?
That's never going to happen. Nothing will get done. Right. That's another illusion.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
What I was thinking, yeah, sorry.
No, we're being asked to, or given the opportunity to really reimagine or reinvent what we want this to look like. I've written about it before, about how I pictured circles of people, circles within circles, kind of circle going down to circles to circles to circles.
Right. That's the ancient way, is to be in circle with one another, to work together in tribe, is to have elders that take turns, but you still need leadership. What I was thinking about that's so fascinating when you were talking about Pallas Athena and Uranus is what they represent, kind of what I hear, what they represent is this idea of a different kind of leadership. They're not afraid to work with others. However, they're not controlled by others. Yeah. So their leadership is very independent. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely something we all need to look at. Now, that doesn't mean we don't work with other people. Collaboration is a good thing, but we want to collaborate from a place of truth. We want to kind of represent what they represent, which is, this is my truth. Yes, the collective might think this, but this is my truth and I'm not going to give it up because it's convenient. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of as we create, because we are in the time of creation, and what we're creating right now, we do through doing, right?
Yeah.
That's the beauty. Like, we have to take action. We can't just create things in our head. Oh, this is a great idea. It's not going to do anything, right? We actually have to go out and do things. We have to watch the words we're using, the way we think. What are we putting energy towards? I think, certainly in the past, and hopefully this will change, so many of us are used to focusing on a negative. Like, that's our pattern, right? Oh, I knew the shit things were going to happen. Oh, watch, it's just going to turn to shit. Like, those are the kinds of things we say to ourselves. It's almost like that's our safety valve. Yes, I want it to turn to shit. Not that we consciously want to, but almost like unconsciously. We want it to go there because then we can be right. Then we can feel safe in our rightness. But that stuff is messing up our lives. So we want to be like, how do I train myself so I actually want the good, even if I'm wrong?
Mm-hmm.
I want that amazing outcome. And to me, that's what Uranus and Pallas Athena represent, is they hold that space, like good generals. It's you hold the space for the truth. Mm-hmm. When you look at leaders that we look up to, and those are the people that hold space for good things to happen.
Yeah.
Not bad things, because they don't care if they're right. But it's much better to be right about good things and create that through our imagination and our words, because we do create our reality. Right? We taught this is what this is about. It's that moment between Pisces and Aquarius, where we're in this space, where we're the one is handing over what the scepter or the ankh to the other, right? Yeah. And so what does that look like? How do we stumble and crawl through this experience and be delighted, because we're having these awful experiences, but we're having experiences, we're alive, we get to hold a vision. That's so powerful.
To be clear, we're talking about the procession of the ages there. We're moving out of the age of Pisces into the age of Aquarius, because the ages move backwards.
So... like the nodes, right?
Yes.
And I think what's also interesting is the nodes are kind of giving us that point of like no return, in a sense, nodal return, it's so funny, towards where we're going, what we're draining. And the 26 of Sag, which is the
what, conjunct the galactic center? Is that
right? Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Galactic center at 27. So it's just moving off it for this, but it's still on it. So, yeah, because it's a big.
Right. So it's interesting. And it's an eight. So it gives us the strength to, you know, move into where we need to. I just think this setup or this play that's happening, if we think about each, this full moon as a play and a moment in time, is that all the players are handing us these, you know, they're giving us the seeds, but until we take the action, nothing changes. Like, you know, it's like watching a movie. If you just see what you need to do, but you don't do it, then it's kind of like the moment is gone, right?
Absolutely. And that's why I keep calling it an opportunity, because, you know, I mean, there are certain things that, you know, this is so powerful. Certain things are going to change anyway. And like Jen and I have talked about a lot, you know, they're all players in the game of this changing society. You know, Donald Trump, his role really is to show us our collective shadow in our face so that we can go, we don't want any more of that. Thank you very much.
Right, but it takes action.
Some people see them differently, so that's...
At the end, it takes action, regardless of whether you're for or against. Because I see, you know, it's interesting to see how, you know, on the left, we have, you know, in the States, and I'm sure in other countries, we have these women rising, like, you know, we have AOC and these different people rising. But now, even on the right, you know, we see females rising that are, you know, very much into conspiracies and, you know, very anti, you know, all kinds of things. So it's, you know, again, we're seeing that stretching out of, you know, the polarization and the opportunity. This is a fabric. What are we doing with the fabric? So again, I think comes back to that idea, are we focused on the negative, what can go wrong? Or we are like, here's an opportunity. This is the great soup. Everything is in here. Where do I want to kind of go forward? What do I want to do? Remembering they're holding out the pillars or the, you know, the placards, but we don't need to, you know, it's kind of like a marketplace. Like somebody's going, here, this way, or, you know, democracy, or, you know, we hate everyone or whatever. And then you kind of go, no, come on, I'm going to the store, you know, kind of the one in the middle. And for me, what I think is so exciting is like, even like, you know, of course I talk about the US because this is where I live, but the postal kind of thing, right? The whole postal thing, seeing that it's kind of incredible to see, you know, the patriarchy kind of declaring, you know, Trump, here's the patriarchy. I'm going to, you know, I don't like the mail. It's impacting me. I'm going to move all those mailboxes. I'm going to put somebody in charge. And then, you know, then people kind of going, wait, the mail, all of us can get behind something like the mail. Yeah. No, don't take our right, because everyone's impacted by the mail. Like, and so it's like, it's so interesting to see, yes, actually, wow, they did make a difference, right? Yeah. Yes, someone's going, what? That's not going to do anything. Protests don't do anything. And yet,
yeah, it did stop it. It stopped the destruction of USPS for now.
But it, you know, it doesn't, you know, the point is, it doesn't matter. We can't get hooked into that. like how it's morphing or changing. What we can get hooked into is the fact that our choices make a difference. Mm-hmm. Our actions make a difference. How it all turns out, we don't know. It's like that tale, you know, that good, is it good? Is it bad? We don't know, right? It doesn't matter. It's like, and I think that's the key to me, is just letting all those things just be what they are and not trying to hold them in place, right? But certainly the structure, which is how are we treated and how we treat each other and what we think about, you know, our intuition, and not calling it names that we can go, ooh, woo, woo, you know, like something weird that we shouldn't do, like our intuition, oh, that's a terrible thing, like, oh, get away from me, creepy, weird, right? It's just like, no, it's options, right? We should not be hiding who we are, because that's going to make other people uncomfortable.
Oh, right? For sure, yeah. But the same on the other way, though, you know, the science is being, you know, oh, you don't have any intuition, you don't have any gut feelings and things like that. I see people attacking science now. We need both. We need the right and left brains, if that really is a thing we need.
Somebody was telling me that there's a group of scientists that are sidestepping the kind of political stuff, and they're getting together to share information. And I actually believe scientists, whether they know it or not, are highly intuitive. It's just a matter of living through your heart, right? When you make decisions that are heart-based, not just, oh, I can experiment with people and I can experiment with animals because it feels, you know, oh, it's a new idea, right?
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so shall we do the symbols? Or do we have anything else to say about this? I did want to mention before we do them that Pallas Athena stations direct 3 days after this full moon on September the 5th. So we do have Mars stationing retrograde, but we have one in, one out, if you like, of retrograde. And then after that, Jupiter stations direct on September the 12th. So things are going to start, even though we have Mars retrograde coming up, we're moving towards the end of this major retrograde season that we've had this summer. So I just wanted to add that in.
No, I think that's important, and maybe to just talk a little bit about I'd like to chat a little bit about the Mars retrograde. I do believe it's going retrograde at 29. Is it 29 degrees?
27, I think. No, 28. Oh, we were both wrong. In the middle. 28.
I couldn't remember, it was 28 or 29.
28 degrees and 8 minutes, actually.
Okay, so 28 degrees, how many minutes?
28, eight.
Okay, so 28 degrees, you know, that is one of those, what do they call them? Like key degrees that activates us, but it's also a one, right? Mm-hmm. So just thinking about 28 is the number that forces us to trust ourselves instead of others. Mm-hmm. And I also think, to me, a lot of the whole Martian thing is so misaligned, where people always talk about Mars as being this warrior that destroys everything. It really is our passion, our libido, the thing that wakes us up. Yes, it's the fire starter. So when it goes into retrograde, and it's going into retrograde in its own sign, in the sign of new beginnings, mm-hmm. we know a new fire is being lit. And to me, this is the time to really honor that fire. Fire is such a sacred part of our, you know, growth and our birth. We've just been talking about birthing and holding, you know, giving birth, like when you're pregnant and you eat the right foods, you do all these things, you sleep because your body takes over. But the part that they never tell you about, it's like when you get married, they always talk about the wedding, but they never talk about what happens afterwards. When your baby is born, when you're married, it's nothing like them, like the fairy books, the storybooks. It's awful, right? It's just like, it's kind of terrifying because you don't know. You've got this thing. You feel clumsy. You don't know how to do it. It's just like, I had no idea. It was so hard to, change my whole life because now I have a living being that I have to take care of. And I think this time with Mars is understanding our emotion and our anger. The thing that we have a lot of anger that we haven't processed because we've been told to shut up for so long and to behave a certain way.
I also think, particularly as a woman, we've been told that being angry is wrong. So I think this Mars retrograde is changing how we feel about anger, because anger can be very empowering, you know, right, where it's directed. That's
the feeling. But the point is, this is it. It's up to us to use the fire, right? We can use fire to burn down buildings and things, but we can use fire to warm people, mm-hmm, and to read by the dog. So it's like, how are we using it? Well,
Mars inspire. Mars in Aries is inspiration too. It's
Your
inspiration. It's like, yeah.
Right. So even though it's, so it's understanding, like, mm-hmm, it will make us more fiery. How are we tending the fire that's burning within us? I think this fire is here to make us aware that we need to not in real terms, but we want to set fire to our illusions and this idea that we're trapped, that we can't do. Somebody else is stopping us from doing what we want. No, we can't do it.
Huh? The Phoenix energy and the Mars retrograde purely in Aries. So Mars last went retrograde in Aries in 1988. But it retrograded back into Pisces, so it wasn't all in Aries like this one. The last time it fully retrograded in Aries was 1941, just before Pearl Harbor. But then again, we didn't have it aspecting all these other things as well. This Mars retrograde is unlike a Mars retrograde ever, probably. And I think it's massively important for all the things Jen said about really relearning our Mars energy. Because, Jen and I have all talked about how the female archetypes have been portrayed negatively. So has the male archetypes a lot of the time. an awful lot of the time, they've not been allowed to have their softer side. They've been angry, they've been mean, they've been all those kind of things. How about we rewrite all of them?
That's the thing, is like putting the blame. I think too, it's also putting the blame on the external is what we tend to do and what we've been conditioned to do. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel controlled. I'm a victim. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying that people don't actually have circumstances where there are people that are controlling
them. We're talking collectively, I think, really. Right.
But I do think that a lot has to do with how we believe that we are stuck, mm-hmm, right? That somebody does have power over us. I just saw, I think it was on Instagram, just scrolling through, that some famous singer. She's very famous. I think she hasn't followed the rules. Like, it was talking about her because she just doesn't follow the rules. She has like one name. She's English. Anyway, she had posted, she read a book by somebody and she never even realized, and never realized that she had power over her own thoughts and can do what she wanted. Like, and that's collectively is really the truth. And it's like, wow, yes, this is how we think. Like, oh, you mean I can just walk away from this? I don't have to be controlled by somebody else's idea that I need to be punished. And, sometimes it's harder, but just knowing that that's not what life is about, that relationship you have or that entanglement you have with someone or something is not real, right? It's real because you are in agreement with it. But when you go, like, wait a minute, I don't actually care about what this person does or thinks. I'm just going to move away. Right. And I get this a lot in my clients, because this is the work that I work with in the Akashic Records, is, dissolving a lot of these entanglements. And to me, this is the sacred work, and that's where we can light a fire to our old beliefs that somehow somebody else has control over us. Because if we're connected to the divine,
I'm dying to know who the singer is now. Adele?
Oh my God, yes, Adele, that's it. Yes. I knew you were going to go off and try to think about it. Me, I'm like, but it's Adele, exactly. I really admire her, not only because she has an amazing voice, but because she has lived her truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she has. Yeah.
She has not, when people said, oh, if you're famous and you're a singer, then your whole life is out there. She has just done whatever she's wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And that to me is an example of how we get to be. You know, that to me is the Pallas Athena. It's the Uranus energy. Mm-hmm. It's what we do to be who we are. To be that amazing singer and to live our private life, and
yeah,
other people dictate how it is. That's such bullshit.
No, she is a good role model, and she doesn't care what people think of her either.
So. And the thing is, she creates controversy, and that's so interesting. Yeah. People are always picking her out, and she just keeps doing what she does. And like, I don't care. I don't care if I look foolish. I don't care if you say bad things about me. You're not controlling my life, right? Yeah.
Exactly.
We can all learn from that.
Yes, we could. Anyway, we should do the symbols. Can we go?
Yes.
So you do yours this time.
Okay. So, 11 degrees Pisces. Men traveling a narrow path seeking illumination. A woman traveling a narrow path seeking illumination.
People.
People, thank you. I couldn't think of what it was. Like, yeah, people. The keynote is the capacity inherent in every individual to seek, at whatever cost, entrance to a transcendent realm of reality. Wow, that's just what we've been talking about. Mm-hmm. This refers to the ancient and eternal symbol of the path of discipleship. The greatness of people is that they can always be greater. And the belief, deeply rooted in everyone's inner nature, is that if they fulfill the necessary conditions, we can find elders who will have already attained a higher level of consciousness and will transfer the attainment and light to each individual. The path is always open to the pure in heart, the mentally aware, the conqueror of emotions, and the spiritually self-mobilized. So this opens up a new level of consciousness. People are always in the making and remaking. They can always go further, reach beyond. But every person has to take the first step. Someone can show us the path, but individually only, alone, can we do the walking. Thus, the Zen injunction, walk on.
Mm. I love that.
Yeah, powerful.
Yeah, and that kind of, to me, is that Pisces, Virgo opposition. That's kind of what it always means to me. It's kind of like, the Virgo is one who is whole unto themselves, but they're bringing that spirit down to earth in a useful way, and only we can actually take that.
Right. Path. Actualize. Yeah. Right. We can only actualize by doing.
Yeah. It doesn't mean we don't have elders, as it said. Yeah.
No, I mean, we do look to role models, and we look to a role model. The thing is not to get hooked into a role model forever, but only have a role model for as long as we need. Like, oh, what are they doing? Oh, they're doing, okay, let me follow. And then we say, oh, do I need another role model, or does that same one work?
And move out of the idolatry thing too. The elder might be guiding you, but the old ancient things against idolatry, they have a real point, you know. When
I mean, it's like coaching, you know, now we talk about it in terms of coaching, like a good coach can't do or won't do the things for you. They will advise you and encourage you, and they'll help you understand your strengths and weaknesses, but they will not do the path for you, and they cannot, right? No one can change you, only
or our presidents or our prime ministers or anybody. Right.
Doesn't matter who, doesn't matter how great they are, how ascended they are.
Or Michelle Obama. I'm sorry, I like Michelle Obama. I think she's a wonderful woman. But the idolatry of her speech at this, yes, it's just like...
Michelle Obama. Oh, that's so funny. I couldn't hear the name. It was like Angel Olittle, something.
Michelle
like.
Obama.
Right. Now I know who you mean. Yes, I agree with you. She's an amazing human being. She's a wonderful role model, but she's not an idol. And we have to stop getting hooked into idolizing. To me, that's the whole point of this noon, right? Yeah. It's this, the Piscean illusion about what happens when you idolize. And the, as you were saying, unto yourself, the Virgoan energy of, I have to do my own work. I have to go through the, whatever it is, the suffering, the challenge, the hardship, because, you know, the fire, I have to go through the, what do they call that? When you are, or the hero's journey, when you're burnt, you know.
So stop calling for Michelle Obama to be president, all right? She doesn't want to be. She's always said she doesn't want to be. She's not your savior.
No one can save you. We can have good leadership, but we can't expect them to be idols. Like the idea that somebody is so great that they can be everything. And then once they're there and they disappoint us, then we're angry. It's like, no human being doesn't have human things that we're gonna like and we're not gonna like, right?
Anyway, my symbol. A high crumbling wall. It is part of a ruin and covered with ivy. Power is stored in the earth at primal quickening points. Often in these places, humanity erects monuments to its own folly. Eventually, these merge into the landscape and everything comments upon everything else. Being held between the earth's wise presence and humanity's dim apprehension of what is really involved here. One side of the feeling nature is so intuitive and psychically astute that you are harboring advanced gifts that can serve Earth evolution in staggering ways. Another side of the feeling nature is contorted with reactions, judgments, and condemnations of the collective trends of humanity and of the weakness of the human flesh. These objections and rejections of the human scene rebound upon the self and poison the psychic faculties. It is only when you heal and forgive and renounce the minor key irritable voice inside and out that the flood tide of burgeoning awareness of what is arising in this earth with all its ripples can wipe away the false structures and foster the new birth, the tuned in and blessings, focused outlook and inlook. I mean, that kind of sums up as everything we've been talking about as well, how we idolize certain things and how we control certain things rather than being in this alignment and realizing that, our human idolatry and control and all those things is just not serving ourselves, really.
Right. There is no one quick fix. There is no one person that can fix everything. It's like we have to do our part. Bottom line, we can't get away from it.
Yeah.
And hopefully we can do it well enough for ourselves that we can do it with others, right?
Exactly.
Collectively.
So I think we've gone way long today. So Jen, how can people find you?
You can find me on my website, jenduchene.com, JenDuchene. I also have a YouTube channel, I think it's under Jen Duchene Illuminate 8, something like that, where I post weekly videos. I have a membership and I'm launching a new invitation very soon for a new membership, the Cocoon. So I'm very excited about that. And my cards are available on my website. I'm on Facebook. I have a group, We Belong Here. I'm on Instagram. Yes, I think, yeah. And if you're interested in readings or anything, they're all available on my website, or you can reach out to me.
Cool. So Louise Eddington, louiseeddington.com, LOUISEEDINGTON. My business name is Cosmic Owl Astrology. I have Instagram under that name, YouTube under that name, Facebook page under that name. I also have a group, the Cosmic Owl Astrology Cafe. So if you search that, you'll find everything. My two books are available through my website, as are ways to work with me also. And please don't forget that we have our Patreon, patreon.com/weirdlymagical. Just $3 a month, less than a Starbucks latte. And you can keep our work going on these podcasts. So, oh, we also have a Weirdly Magical Facebook page and a Weirdly Magical Instagram. So all followers and likes and all those things appreciated.
Oh, very much appreciated. Thank you. Thank you.
And always thank you for listening. I love hearing people go, oh, I listen to your podcast all the time.
Awesome. We love reviews. We love hearing about your stories and how we impact you. It is really such a joy. Thank you.
So for now, it's goodbye from Lou.
And goodbye from Jen.